AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. People are gathering for Sunday services at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston. Eva Bryan says she was shocked by the murders of Pastor Clementa Pinckney and eight others during Wednesday's Bible study.
This is bad. You would never think, the holy city, you would never think that nine people would get killed in church. But you know what? The good part about that is heaven gained nine angels.
The main service starts in about a half hour, the first time the congregation has worshiped since the racially motivated murders. The suspect, 21-year-old white man Dylan Roof, is being held on nine counts of murder and a weapons charge. A 20-year-old man is dead. Nine other people are wounded after someone opened fire on people taking part in a neighborhood block party in Detroit. Assistant Police Chief Steve Dolitz tells WXYZ-TV he's angry because the shooter had no regard for families.
There's kids out here. I'm livid. And there's no excuse. There's not any excuse why no one's not talking.
One man is critically injured and eight others, five men and three women, are in serious condition. New Orleans police are looking for Travis Boies, who, despite being handcuffed behind his back and in the back of a police SUV, was able to fatally shoot police officer Daryl Holloway early yesterday morning. Police spokesman Tyler Gamble.
According to the initial investigation right now, Boies shot Officer Holloway from within the vehicle during that transport. After the vehicle crash, Boies fled the scene.
Police have been searching the neighborhood where that shooting took place. Search for two convicted killers who escaped from a northern New York prison shifts south. Authorities looking near the Pennsylvania border, about 350 miles from the prison where they escaped 2 weeks ago. State police say they're acting on word of two men being sighted in the area. This is AP Radio News. The New York Times reports that even a big increase in capacity has not cut the waiting list of veterans seeking VA health care. In fact, the newspaper reports the number of veterans forced to wait a month or more is 50% higher now than it was a year ago when a scandal over false records and long wait times racked the Department of Veterans Affairs. Washington Nationals pitcher Max Scherzer had to settle for a no-hitter after in the top of the ninth with two out and two strikes, he plunked Pittsburgh's Jose Tabata on the elbow, ending his bid for a perfect game. He got the next batter to fly out to end the 6-0 Nationals win. Scherzer says yesterday's game and the one-hitter against the Brewers a week ago are special.
My last two starts, this is some of the best baseball I've thrown, best pitching I've done.
And, of course, baseball agrees. Scherzer is the first pitcher since 1944 to have one hit or fewer in executive starts. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Okay, so five tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the McLean, Virginia offices of Offutt Kerman Law Offices. This is your host, Dana Theus with InPowerCoaching.com, and we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today. We have Greg Packer, Chairman and CEO of Access Point Human Resources, Scott Goss, President and CEO of Preferred System Solutions, Raul Pandey, President of Collaboralink Technologies, Stacy Redman, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services, and my co-hosts, Phil Horeggi with Sabre Systems, John Wax and Brian Lawson of Offutt Kerman Law Firm, Justin Lang Cressa, and Katie Jordan Verisol. We're going to start our interviews today with Greg Packer, Chairman and CEO of Access Point Human Resources. Greg, what is Access Point Human Resources?
Access Point is an outsourcing company for human resources, accounting, and staffing and recruiting.
And how big or small is the business?
We're about $400 million in revenue, about 500 client companies that we support, and about 10,000 worksite employees in our HR outsourcing business, and about 2,600 in our staffing and recruiting businesses.
And you founded this business?
I did.
Why?
Nothing else to do. I had been in the industry previously, in the HR outsourcing business previously, and sold a company called AMSAF to ADP. It now operates as ADP Total Source. And thought I would retire at 38 and coach hockey and go to PTA meetings and hang out with my wife. And she sort of chased me out of the house. And my former vice president of sales started calling quarterly, monthly, weekly, daily, and said we should get back in the business. So I did.
So you like running a business?
And then actually, I got into the commercial real estate business for a little while, which at that time in Detroit, Michigan, was a way to give something back to the community. So that didn't work out well. And also, it wasn't much of a people business. I really like working with people. I discovered that commercial real estate was very transactionally oriented, and it was more about the deal than about the people involved in the deal. So I really missed building a team and working with, you know, solving problems for clients and things of that nature. So
have you always been a people person? When you were a kid, were you a people person?
Yeah, like I always preferred to play sports as opposed to watch them, you know, hang out with, you know, friends, be down at the playground, and, you know, just all I can remember from a kid was, you know, hanging out with other people. So
what were mom and dad doing?
Working. My dad worked a lot of hours. My mom had four, kids that were very energetic. They needed to have a lot of attention paid to them, keeping the house in order. So
were you a big brother or a little brother?
I'm the oldest of four, so mm-hmm. I'm the big brother. And close family, we spent a lot of time hanging out together in the parks and the northwest side of Detroit.
Were you a good big brother?
I was a very good big brother to my siblings, but to my parents, I probably was a bit of a problem child. So.
Well, that's interesting. So a problem child, big brother. So your siblings looked up to you and your parents...
I, from time to time, would get my siblings into a little mischief along with me. So I think my parents would have liked me to lead them down a little bit different path sometimes.
What's your relationship like today with your parents?
Very close. Late Saturday night, we're driving with my whole family back to New Philadelphia, Ohio for a family reunion.
And they'll still let you back in other words?
Still let me back in.
What was your first job?
As far as I can recall, I mean, I just remember always working, but probably either shoveling snow and cutting lawns or a newspaper route. They both sort of started at about the same time.
Did you have to work?
I don't remember ever being told that I had to work. I was really liked the concept of, you know, doing something and walking away with money as a result. So.
That seemed like fun. Yeah. What did you spend your money on?
Gifts for my family at the holidays come to mind, but lots, you know, just sort of improve the lifestyle of a youngster living in Detroit. I you know, buying a bike or buying, you know, toys. Or I was a big fan of the Dairy Queen, which is around the corner, so that was always a popular spend for me.
Greg, in the green room, you were talking about how you were called a MacGyver and a problem solver. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I just have always sort of had a knack for figuring things out, finding out a way to get things done. You know, whether it's, you know, having to, you know, move something heavy in a creative way, building a treehouse as a kid, finding ways to make money. I had also the jobs I mentioned. I also painted addresses on curbs. We told people that the fire department had mandated it. That helped sales.
Greg, tell us a little about growing up in Detroit, because you appear to have been there during a time when maybe some of the first gas crisis, you know, long lines, you know, for gas. So growing up in, you know, maybe at a time when there was like a lot of unemployment. So is this where maybe some of your like for helping people maybe stems from?
Somewhat. I mean, the first unemployment I recall is my dad being a part of it. My dad lost his job in the early 70s. It was pretty traumatic because there were no jobs available. So he pumped gas at night and looked for a job during the day. So that was sort of a memorable thing.
How old were you?
I was probably 13, 14 years old, before, you know, seventh, eighth grade time frame. The most memorable thing, though, was the 1968 riots. So I remember, you know, sleeping in the basement in what was formerly the coal storage room, because it was concrete on all four sides because we heard lots of gunfire every night. So, you know, I'm not sure that it was so much was the unemployment, but just, you know, kind of a togetherness. And at that point, it was kind of, you know, kind of the family against the world, I would say.
Do you feel like these days your family has any of that, your family, your children, has any of that carryover closeness?
Oh, very much so. I recall a time when, you know, I grew up in a rough neighborhood, so I'm kind of a little rough and tumble guy, I guess. But I remember one of my sons getting in trouble for roughing up a kid at school who had picked on his sister. I'm not sure I'm getting emotional about this. In any case, my son sort of meted out a little family justice, and the administration of the school wasn't too fond of it. And I said, well, you can kick him out if you'd like, but he's going to Cedar Point because it's more important that he take care of his sister than he abide by your rules, and you should have not allowed the activity that occurred to be harmful to his sister to occur.
So. Yeah, so that protector role, because you would describe yourself as the oldest, you know, as having that protector role in your family. So that's something that seems to have been a very strong theme carrying through.
Oh, very much so.
Your son has that now.
Both my sons and both my daughters.
And is that why, you know, in your job today, you know, with the services that your company does, you act as that protector role for your clients?
I think I enjoy, again, it kind of comes down to solving problems. I enjoy, you know, that's a big part of what we do, is we protect our clients from the risks associated with employing people, from the risks associated with people getting hurt, you know, on the job, workers' comp, things like that. So there's probably some correlation there.
Going back to your fatherhood role, is it harder to run a company or be a father?
I think it's a lot harder to be a father.
Why?
Because they talk back. So, can't fire them.
You can't fire your kids.
There's a strong sense of, I guess, justice or, you know, equity. I mean, I think when, as you were growing up in this tough neighborhood, I mean, you were looking not so much to be protector, but maybe just to make sure that playing field was level. You know, is that something that you feel strongly about?
I think
about?
I do have a knack for that. I mean, I recall when I went to the University of Michigan for school, I was a bouncer as a job, and I remember being particularly sensitive when you know, guys would get drunk and act inappropriately towards the women in the crowd. You know, it's not something that sat well with me. So I would often intervene.
I'm curious, in your growing up experience when you were really young, you know, as the protector of your brothers and sisters, or maybe you saw things in your neighborhood that gave you a sense that protecting people was important.
I don't really recall that. I mean, I do recall most days that I went to school, there was something that would probably be, you know, described as a fight that occurred. So, you know, getting to and from school was not always just a pleasant experience. There was lots of altercations and disagreements and, you know, things that had to be settled, you know, fights on the playground, things like that. Not, I mean, it wasn't, you know, guns and knives and things of that nature. It was, you know, I think it was, candidly, it was a good way to get to know people. Usually when someone new moved in the neighborhood, we'd beat him up to get to know where he stood.
You don't see that quite as much these days.
No, it's nowhere near as acceptable.
I'm curious, the rough and tumbleness, did that come in handy starting a business?
Yeah, I think somebody else said, I think maybe Stacy earlier when we were chatting, you know, whatever it takes to get the job done. I mean, I think that's, you know, really at my core is I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. You know, in my business career, I can recall a time when a couple of people were having to print up, you know, thousands of W-2s at the end of the year, and the printer was broken. There was a little piece that you had to hold. And I said, well, I can do that. I don't know what you guys are doing with regard to organizing the data, but I can certainly sit here and hold it so that form goes through correctly. So I've just always had an attitude of being willing to do whatever has to be done to get the job done. So,
are you more like your mom or your dad?
My kids and my wife tell me I'm more like my dad, but I think probably I'm more like my mom. My dad doesn't handle stressful situations particularly well or sudden surprises, and I probably my greatest quality is I'm always very, very calm. I never really react to the stressful situations. In fact, people in my business tell me that I seem to enjoy stress.
What's the most satisfying thing about running a business?
Helping people. I think, you know, we actually have a program in our company called Dream Access, where we encourage the employees in our company to recommend ways for us to grant dreams to our employees. So we use that program to get a woman who had a hearing problem a hearing aid, you know, send a woman who lost her husband to cancer on a nice vacation and things of that nature. So
what's the website?
Access Point HR, or www.accesspointhr.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Phil Horeggi, founder and president of Sabre Systems. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute right after this Business Spotlight. Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, the close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region. with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Great. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, John Wax with Offutt Kerman. Next up, we have Scott Goss, President and CEO of Preferred Systems Solutions. Scott, what is Preferred Systems Solutions?
PSS is an information technology and management services company. Predominantly serve the federal markets and the intelligence and DOD communities, as well as the federal civilian agencies. And we have a subsidiary that does commercial outsourcing for accounting, finance, contracts, type of back office support.
And how big or small is the company?
We're 300 employees.
And you did not found the company, but you sort of were brokered into it.
I was broken into it. The company was founded in 1990 by a gentleman named Rob Heisel, who I introduced to CM Equity, who is our equity backer in the company. And they got together, and Rob decided to do something with the company, to sell majority interest in the company, and they decided to team up and introduce me to run the company.
So was this your first time running a company?
No. I've been in the government business for 25 years, so I was with a number of well-known companies that grew up within the industry, INET that sold to Wang, a company called Signal that sold to Viridian, which was public, and I became president there. Viridian sold to General Dynamics. I became a general manager for General Dynamics. So I spent a lot of time in the government industry running companies.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in New York, in Westchester County, New York.
And I'm curious, did you ever dream when you were a kid about running companies?
No, actually, nothing like that. No, I was a musician. I dreamed of being a musician.
Really? Yeah. What did you play?
I played, my first instrument was piano, then drums, guitar, and the bass guitar.
What were Mom and Dad doing?
Dad was in the pharmaceutical business, and Mom was a teacher.
What did your dad do in the pharmaceutical business?
He was in production. He actually was in different parts of it, mostly production and sometimes development, and as a pharmacist as well later on in life.
Did you ever get to work in a pharmacy?
I did, helping him with his farm. He had a pharmacy that he was working at, and I used to, and they broke off a product business, a cosmetic business, so I used to help him out there.
Did you ever make cosmetics?
I did, in the back of the pharmacy. Mix all the chemicals, you know, kind of measure them out, learn about all that.
Send the kid back to play with the chemicals.
Yeah, send the kid back to play with the chemicals. It's good stuff.
I wonder if they do that anymore. I don't think it's legal.
So. No, maybe not.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
I'd say my mom.
Why?
My dad was book smart, brilliant, graduated top of his class, but, you know, common sense, he just was not there for running a business, having a business. In fact, he failed a business that he tried to start. My mom had more of a financial savvy to her, and more of a business sense to her, even though she was a teacher.
I was going to say, she was a teacher. Where did she get that?
I think from her parents. Her father was a accountant, so probably from her. But she started into the stock market and investing and playing a little bit in the stock market and kind of got an interest in that.
You also told us that she was a Holocaust survivor.
She was. She escaped Dachau.
How did that come through to you as a kid, knowing that about your mom?
You know, I think when you're young, you can't even, you know, even for adults today, you can't appreciate what happened. If you've gone to a Holocaust museum or ever studied what happened, it's hard to really appreciate and imagine, especially when you're young, that 6 million people were exterminated. So when I was young and you learn this stuff, you know, it's hard to really appreciate it. But you know that there's something there. When you get older, I think it touched me a lot more.
Mm-hmm. You said you had a turning point in life.
I did. I would say probably when I was about 14, I started heading down a bad path into drugs and just going down a path that, you know, many young people probably find themselves and going deeper and deeper into that. And I think it's probably because I was raised so strict that I rebelled, and that was my rebellion.
How did that turn around? Because you obviously didn't go down all the way.
I think by the time I was probably late 16, I got kicked out of high school. And I found myself, I had an accident off of a motorcycle when I was young, and I wound up in the hospital for several weeks, and I think I came to the reality of where my life was going. You know, I watched friends that I had grown up with and my mom's friends' kids that were going off to Princeton and Yale and Harvard and making something of themselves, and here I was kicked out of high school early in my junior year and going nowhere. And I said, what am I going to be in 3 years, a bum living on the street? And it really just woke me up.
Did you get yourself back together?
I did. I got myself back together. I moved out of New York at that time. I went down to a place called Rising Sun, Maryland, and I went back to school there, reengaged, did really, really well, and got accepted to college and graduated the top 5% of my class in college and really just learned that applying myself, I could do it.
Mm-hmm. So it turned out not to be impossible at all.
No. In fact, you know, it's really hard when you're going through it. But if you really see what you want out there, it's all available and it's all there. It just depends. You know, for me, I wasn't a great student. I had to study 10 hours. And, you know, friends of mine could study an hour and get an A. I'd have to study 12 and get a B. But it's all about how hard you want to work to get that. And I was willing to do it.
So looking back at that black hole you were in, was it because you saw a better future, or was it because you just knew you were better than this?
I knew I didn't want that for a living. I knew I didn't want to be that person, and I knew I wanted more out of life. So I think it was just being hungry to say, I know I don't want this, and I know that I want something more. I didn't know what I wanted, but, you know, I was looking at people that were going to be successful, and I said, I don't want to be a disappointment to myself or to my parents, and I want something more out of life.
Do you have any advice for parents who have kids in that difficult time where they're going down the wrong path?
It's really hard. There's no one answer, no one size, or nothing that fits all, because there's all different situations that cause that. What I would say is, when you recognize it, to intervene early and do something early. There's a lot of help available out there, and I've learned that even with my kids as they grow up. So I think that, first of all, keeping your children busy is really important. And the more I see where people get into trouble is when their kids are not busy. Idle time is not good time usually, especially when you're a child. So my advice is, if there's idle time and you see it, do something about it. Get your kids active. Get them into hobbies. Get them into school and things.
You know, I guess following up on the survivor theme, I think you have a pretty strong survival instinct, not just for what you went through as a young person, but also you've been employed by companies that got acquired, and then you've survived those. Usually people either make it, you know, one way or the other, but you're the one who, you know, consistently sort of like made the cut. So talk a little bit about that. Do you see a correlation, maybe, how some of this survival instinct manifested itself professionally?
You know, I used it as an opportunity. With each company that got acquired, to me, it was actually an opportunity to do something else. You know, I like a lot of things, and I like doing a lot of things. I'm a smorgasbord guy. I don't want to just eat one thing. I want to eat a bunch of things when I go. I looked at that as the survival as an opportunity. I remember saying, when Signal got acquired and I actually put the deal together, I wanted to leave. I had done everything I wanted to do. I helped grow a company from $30 million to $260 million organically, and I felt really successful. And I remember somebody saying, hey, this is an opportunity to be a president of a public company. You know, so it was a new challenge. I didn't look at it as survival. I looked at it as an opportunity.
Are you always opportunistic?
Yes. You know, if there's a door that's open, I'm willing to take it.
But where does the discipline come from?
You know, I think it's also being conservative. You know, I'm willing to do that. You know, so discipline comes. If you're conservative and you don't want to take too much risk, then you will find the balance in life. So I tend to be conservative and say, okay, I'm not going to just throw caution to the wind, you know, but try to look at a balance.
Do you have any role models that helped you through the tough times, someone that was a particular influence to you?
Through the tough times, I can't think, you know, back that far now. It's probably 35 years ago, and I can't say through the tough times that there were role models that got me there. I can say through the business times that there have been many entrepreneurs that have got me there as role models. People, you know, like Ken Bajaj, who owned iNet, or Roger Modi, who owned Signal. People that were professors at AU, Howard Schillett, that started their own businesses. I mean, they were entrepreneurs, and they were known, and they helped me, and they were mentors to me. People like Jim Allen, that was a CFO of multiple public companies in the sector, that you know, taught me little things about business and about how to be.
What's the website?
www.pssfed.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Justin Lang of Cressa. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Andy Stewart with a company called Imagine If. What is Imagine If, Andy?
We are a startup company, and we do hotel rooms. So right now, we are an application and a website where you can buy hotel rooms online. We are competing against Expedia, Orbitz, Priceline, and all the rest to give you a better stay. And what we're doing is we're offering you one-stop shopping across 23 rewards programs. You get better data and a better stay.
How'd you get the idea for this?
Well, we're all a bunch of frustrated travelers. So I was in the Army for 30 years, and I had a lot of short-notice opportunities where I could take a vacation. My go-to was three or four of the major brands out there, and there was a lot of problems with bait and switch, or you wouldn't get what you want. So what we did was, myself and the other co-founders who have a Marriott background, we have a team of Marriott and Army. We decided to put together a company 2 years ago, and we did something unorthodox where we actually decided, let's go to the hotel chains, cut a deal with them. They give us better access to data. You get a better value. And at the end of the day, when you book with us, you get a reservation from inside the hotel databases, if you will. So you get a real, actual, hard confirmation. And with that better data, you get a one-click cancellation policy and rewards points.
Why do you like it so much, real quick?
I like it because, for example, with the app Stay at Hand, you get geographic information dominance, if you will. You can search across multiple states. Our website, www.stayfaster.com, gives you faster, cleaner data and a narrow search.
And the website, one more time, Andy?
www.stayfaster.com is our website.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Andy Stewart with Imagine If. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and that was your Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Bill Leisure with a company called Printing Images. What is Printing Images, Bill?
Printing Images is a commercial printing company located in Rockville, Maryland. We do all types of printing. I like to say, if you have an image and you need it on anything, we can help you with it.
How long has the company been around?
We've been around since 1978. My partner and I bought the company in 2008.
So that's a long time. I bet you've seen some changes in the printing industry.
Yeah. Needless to say, the internet has had a dramatic impact on our business. The nice thing is, people are still people, and they still like working with other people. We just have to make sure they know we're here.
Yeah, not every printing company has survived all the changes. What makes you guys successful?
I think it is that the idea behind the fact that you can't get everything you want off the internet, and we work really hard about building relationships.
What do you like most about the role?
I like the nice thing about printing is every project's different. They're unique in every different way. So that's fun. I'm not selling a widget, as much as people like to think of printing as kind of a commodity. It's really not. But I do want to mention that, back to your earlier question, we have started a division called PI Interactive Solutions. We have two apps that we offer. One app is an augmented reality app, which is the coolest thing. It's like a QR code on steroids. And our other app is an event app for conference planners. So that beautiful book that conference attendees used to get, with the attendees and the sponsors and the logos, we now create an app that the attendee can have that same experience within their phone.
It sounds great. What's the website address?
www.printingimages.com.
Thank you. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage. That was your Business Spotlight with Bill Leisure with Printing Images. Thank you.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, John Wax of Offutt Kerman. Next up, we have Raul Pandey, president of Collabralink Technologies. What is Collabralink Technologies?
So we are a federal IT services firm, and we're focused in a few main areas, business process and case management, cybersecurity, and web and digital media.
How big or small is the company?
We're about 115 folks now, and all of that growth has happened in the last about 4.5 years.
And you told a story about basically coming back to this company to work with your dad when the company was on the rocks.
Yeah, so Collabralink is a family-owned business, and it was founded back in 2003. And back then, I was working at Accenture. I had a full-time job, but I was kind of moonlighting nights and weekends helping my dad out. And I left Accenture. I went back to school to do an MBA. And post-MBA, I wanted to do something completely different. So I went to strategy consulting. I spent a couple of years doing M&A and growth strategy work. And right around 2008, I was, you know, prepping my resume to try to, you know, make the leap into private equity. And of course, the world and the economy was going off a cliff. So, you know, Bear Stearns had collapsed, and Lehman Brothers was on the brink of collapse. And I couldn't get a private equity job because there just were none to be had. Everyone was telling me to come back in a year, basically.
And Dad called.
So my dad called, and he said, "Well, hey, listen, I need some help."
How was the business then?
Collabralink had done kind of the roller coaster thing. You know, he had a couple of good years, then a couple of bad years, then a couple of good years, and then, you know, back in 08, it was a pretty bad year. He was down to one employee, and he was keeping that employee on the bench. He had no revenue stream, or very little revenue stream at the time. But he, you know, he had a vision. And he knew that, you know, I had a background in IT, I had a background in growth strategy, and so he wanted my help to, you know, to achieve that vision.
And here you are, the great pedigree, can't get a job, and Dad calls and says, "Come back and help."
Yeah.
Was that an easy decision?
It was very, well, looking back, it was easy, but at the time, I wrestled with it a lot because I was gearing myself up for this very kind of blue chip career in M&A, and so it felt like a step backwards to go to, you know, little Collabralink. But I thought to myself, you know, I could look back, I could do this and look back with no regret because I could, you know, I would get the chance to be an entrepreneur, I'd get the chance to grow a business, which is what I wanted to try to do, and I'd get the opportunity to just hang out with my dad and spend time with him, you know, in his mid-60s. And I don't think, you know, a lot of people don't get that opportunity.
Raul, how has the opportunity to work with your father over the past 10 years impacted you on a personal level?
It's impacted everything. I mean, it's... like I said, when I started this, I knew it would be a fantastic and very unique thing to be able to kind of sit side by side with my dad and build something together. And I guess the way it's impacted, I would say, our relationship is that, you know, it's been really gratifying for me to see him have his vision fulfilled. Because truly that was, you know, the vision for Collabralink was his. And so I'm just helping to kind of enable it and make it come to fruition. And so that's been quite gratifying.
So who's the boss?
I'm the boss. I'm definitely the boss these days. You know, we early on figured out that, you know, staying in the same swim lane together could be combustible. So we segregated duties, and I picked up and owned the federal business, which was non-existent at the time. So I started the federal practice, and he owned commercial. And today we're a 99.9% federal practice, and so I'm the boss.
You grew your company by over 100 people in 5 years. That's a very ambitious growth plan. Would you say that your expansion plans were a function of a strategic long-term vision, or was it more tactical that you just saw opportunities and took them?
Well, you know, it's a combination of both. I mean, when I started with Collabralink, the first thing I did was a strategic review of where our revenue streams were generating from and where were their opportunities. And so immediately identified federal as, you know, the major revenue opportunity for us. You know, and then from there, I wouldn't say I laid out a tactical plan. I just went about hustling, and so, you know, what I've learned over the years is that, you know, kind of that that can-do and hustle attitude is what gets it done in the end. And so, you know, so there's a little bit of tactical, a little bit of hustle, and a little bit of strategy that all kind of mixed in. And then there's some serendipity that put it all together.
You mentioned in the green room your brother being a doctor. Is there any envy from him not being in the family business?
I don't think so, not at all. No, he's quite successful. He's a Ivy League pedigree guy, and he's the golden child. I'm the black sheep. So,
what did you learn most from your dad?
My dad is an eternal optimist. He can never, you can never tell him no or that something can't be done. I'm way more pragmatic and practical with the way I look at things and the way I approach things. But I've learned that sometimes it's good to just take all the pragmatism out of the equation and just be optimistic. And I've learned that from him because, I didn't have that. And I think that that's something that that's been instrumental in us getting to where we've gotten to.
What did you get from Mom? What qualities?
So mom is very practical, but mom's also a, hey, don't tell me I can't do something kind of person. And if you tell mom she can't do something, she'll try even harder. And so I think that that's been a trait that I picked up from her as well.
So going into operations, coming from a consulting background, you talked about sometimes, you can't have to throw pragmatism aside. What are some other things that you've learned coming out of the consulting side to the operations side?
Well, I mean, I think that the biggest thing is, when we're running our businesses, there's a trap that you can fall into, that everybody falls into, I think, frankly, which is to get too far down in the weeds and get just stuck in the day-to-day. And so that strategy consulting experience really helped me kind of understand that at points you got to pull up and you got to get a 10,000 foot view or a 15,000 foot view and make decisions based on that level. Where do we want to be in 3 years, where do we want to be in 5 years, not what's happening today, what's happening right now. And so I think that consulting background is part of why I'm able to look at the business that way and look at problems that way.
So, Raul, you said that you're pragmatic, and that's great, and sometimes you take a step back. What did you do in your early days in consulting that defined the risk taker that you allow in every once in a while? You told us a story.
I think that the one, I think, major turning point in my career was where, a situation I was in when in my Accenture days, I was basically, 3 years into my career, bopping around between projects. Basically, the company would decide where I would go next. And I was an Oracle ERP guy. And I'd heard from a former manager of mine that she was staffed on a project in Geneva, Switzerland, doing an Oracle implementation for the United Nations. And I thought, well, hey, that sounds pretty cool. I'd like to do something like that. And so I asked her, did she need any consultants? And she said, yeah, I do. And there had been rumors that my office was not going to let anybody go overseas. There was too much demand for our services domestically. So I basically, decided at that point, that I basically needed to take my career in my own hands. I needed to be proactive. If there's something that I wanted, I couldn't be reactive about it. I had to be proactive. And so I wrote down a big speech that I was going to, walk into the partner's office and deliver as to why I should deserve this opportunity. And I did that. I basically sat down and I gave her my pitch.
Did you get it?
I got it. So, that later that weekend, about 4 days later, I was on a plane to Geneva, and I spent a year and a half there on the company dime. So
I'm guessing
fun.
They put you up in this big penthouse with servants.
No, yeah, that's what I thought on the plane. I was dreaming about that. The first place I lived was just across the border in France. It was a small town called Ferney-Voltaire, and I lived in a guest house on a farm. And so, I came from a condo in downtown Chicago. I lived next to a fire station, so I would wake up at night. I'd hear sirens, and in France, I would wake up in the middle of the night because the cows were mooing so loud. So it was a very, very, you know, different experience for me. I didn't speak the language. I didn't know anybody. But, you know, it was exceptional professional and personal growth.
And that was because you took control of your own future.
Right. It was about being proactive. It was about grabbing the bull by the horns and deciding that if you want something, you're going to have to make it happen. It's not just going to fall in your lap.
When you were a kid, little kid, did you ever think you'd be working with your dad?
Never.
Never?
Never. No, never crossed my mind. Never.
No. If your dad were here right now, what would he tell us about you?
I think he'd tell you that I'm pretty tenacious. I mean, I can figure things out pretty quickly. I think that's also from, you know, consulting and having to switch gears, you know, every 3 weeks onto a new deal. So, you know, when we first started the business, we started it in Chicago, and we didn't know the first thing about federal, but, you know, I just dove right in. I didn't listen to all the people who told me it would be, you know, next to impossible to get a contract. I mean, you know, and then, a lot of folks, you know, tell you that you got to go fight for scraps and subcontracts. I just said, forget it. We're going to prime work. We're going to go after it. And I think so. My dad would tell you that, you know, that I'm tenacious because that's, you know, I just dove right into it.
What's the website?
It's www.calabralink.com.
This is Dana Theus with my co-host, Brian Lawson of Offutt Kerman. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, Managing Partner of Conan Burnett PC. Wes, what is Conan Burnett PC?
Conan Burnett PC is a law firm that specializes in integrating legal, tax, and financial advice to help our clients.
And what do clients appreciate most about Conan Burnett?
The integration of the advice so that the client gets the best possible legal, tax, and financial result.
So, who is your perfect client? What do they need?
The perfect client is someone who's intelligent and caring and wants the best possible legal, tax, and financial advice that they can get.
And why do you enjoy your work?
Because I love my clients, and they know that I appreciate them, and I'm trying to do the best by them.
So, how many people work here?
We have a total of 10 people working here for the firm, not counting part-timers.
And why do they like to work for you?
Because they know that they're doing what's best for the client, and they enjoy the satisfaction of doing well by the client.
And what's the company's web address?
www.cohenandburnett.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
Want help starting, growing, fixing, or exiting your business with the help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you start, grow, fix, or exit your business because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you start, grow, fix, or exit your business because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. Get help from CEOs who have walked in your shoes and succeeded. Get help from CEOs who appreciate and understand what you're going through. Email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-host, Katie Jordan of Verisol. Next up, we have Stacy Redmond, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services. Stacy, what is Strategy and Management Services?
At SAMS, we exceed expectations with people who make a difference by supporting our clients in the areas of operations, IT, and facilities management.
And you started this company.
I did.
Why?
I started this company because there was an opportunity. I am a veteran, and I have continuously supported the federal government in many capacities in uniform as a civil servant, and then later with industry. Well, it just so happens, shortly after 9/11, I was at the Pentagon, and I was sitting in a weapon systems review meeting where they were making funding decisions about things that were going to get funded to support the mission and the warfighters at that time. And we saw some things not get funded that, having been there, knew were pretty critical to the mission. And it was very disappointing that in a time where we should have been looking at becoming more fiscally responsible, we were making decisions about things that the warfighters need that weren't going to get. And someone had to do something to make a difference. So our model was to start the company on a lower overhead pool and to kind of use partnerships and things like that to minimize those overhead expenses, because we realized those weren't adding value to our customers. But that was an opportunity to help give equipment to the warfighters.
So you were trying to solve a problem for people you cared about.
Yes.
And I'm curious, where did this just figure it out and figure out a way? Where did that really show up in your life first?
It resonated a couple times over the course of my life. My father worked in the steel industry from Pennsylvania, and the steel industry wasn't doing so well, and things were going under. And, you know, jobs were being lost, money wasn't coming in, and that really hit our family pretty hard. My mother worked for the state, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, so she was also a fiscal servant. So it wasn't like we were get rich, and we had to figure it out as a family how we were going to make it and how we were going to pull through and keep our house and everything intact. So we had to figure it out, and my brother and I contributed in every way that we knew how, and that meant at a very young age getting a job and helping out.
How did you end up in the military?
So I ended up in the military, again, a little rebellious as a teenager, and found myself in a situation my senior year of high school where I had gotten pregnant. And I remember it vividly and thinking about what I was going to do and, you know, how I was going to get through this. And I think one of the things that really turned for me that kind of made things real for me was I was always very, you know, on the academic honor rolls and things like that. So I was actually at our senior banquet, our senior honors banquet. And they were introducing, you know, my fellow students and talking about what colleges they were going to. And I was very pregnant at the time, and they looked at me, and the counselor said, well, we can, you know, I guess I'm comfortable, didn't know what to say, and hadn't asked, said, well, we know what Stacy's going to do. And I said, wow. So, you know, that was a revelation for me. And I said, you know, I'm better than that. And some things are going to happen, and we're going to make it happen. So recognizing that I not only had the responsibility for me when I graduated high school, because, again, the steel industry was what it was, but now I had the responsibility for my daughter. I had to do something.
So how old was she when you enlisted?
When I enlisted, she was just a few months old. When I actually left for training, she was 6 months old.
What was that like?
It was tough. It was tough. But I knew that I had to do something, and that the investment that we were making at that time, that little bit of separation that we were going to have on that during that time, was going to pay dividends in the future.
So this idea, I mean, you're talking about investment, you know, of your time and yourself. That philosophy and that willingness to put off short-term game for long-term security must come in handy running a business.
Oh, definitely. It certainly does. You know, we have the opportunity to impact many folks every day. And sometimes you got to look at the big picture. It's strategy. How are you getting there now? And you've got to begin to focus on that so that you can continue to see those growth opportunities. You're the leader. And people are trusting you with themselves, with their families. They're looking to you to tell them where we're headed. So you better have it together.
You've made a lot of pivotal decisions in your life based on what's in the best interest of those closest to you. With that in mind, what would you say is the best possible legacy for you to leave to others?
So it's funny, the word legacy, because just today we were coming out of our strategic planning session, our mid-year strategic planning session, and I have always said that Sam's is a legacy. Every day, every moment, in everything we do and everything we say, we have an opportunity to create a legacy. We have and that legacy is not just about what you leave for someone, it's how you impact others. So that's always been real for me, because that one pivotal thing can make a huge difference in someone's life.
Stacey, you're obviously a huge inspiration to military veterans. What advice would you give for some of our servicemen and women that are listening to the show, maybe coming out of a deployment or an enlistment and are trying to look for a career path or a job? What could you possibly say to them that may help them out in the future?
I would say reach out. There is a network, and there's a huge network of great people that want to help you. There is really genuine care and concern there for our veterans, something that we didn't have. My father was a Vietnam veteran, several tours in Vietnam, something that he didn't have. People got it now. They understand the contributions and the sacrifices that were made, and they're willing to help.
What do your parents think of your success? And also your daughter, who is now an adult, does she take for granted the success you've had? What does she think of what you've accomplished?
So my daughter, no, she definitely doesn't take it for granted, because she has experienced it all. The company's 7 years old, and having come out of high school, join the military, and then kind of do things in reverse order with education, she got to experience all that while mom was working, while mom was going to school and getting all these degrees. So I think what it has inspired in her is that all things are possible. And she's actually seen it, this experience, and I think it's made her better for it. My parents, they're just in awe. My biggest champions and my hugest cheerleaders, I can't thank them enough for their support, their continued belief in me, and everything that they have helped me become.
What does success mean to you now?
Success to me means when I put my head on my pillow at the end of the day, did I do it right? That's success.
And what does failure mean?
Failure means to me, if I had an opportunity to make a difference and I didn't do it.
Something tells me you succeed a lot more than you fail.
I try, but I've got great resources and a wonderful team of employees who believe in that culture and support those values well.
What's the website?
The website is www.getsamsnow.com.
This is your host, Dana Theis. I'd like to thank our guests, Greg Packer, Chairman and CEO of Access Point Human Resources, Scott Goss, President and CEO of Preferred Systems Solutions, Raul Pondi, President, Collaboralink Technologies, and Stacy Redmond, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services, SAMS. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, Saber Systems, Offutt Kerman, Verisolve, and Cressa, for helping us produce this show. And I would really like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community, plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this